Welcome to WHRO's Weekly Edition. I'm Jordan Christie.
And I'm Barry Graham.
We highlight the week's news and stories happening all over Hampton Roads. In this week's program, blue catfish are an invasive fish species that are rapidly spreading across the Chesapeake Bay. Virginia is asking folks to break out the fryers and utensils to eat the fish before they can damage marine ecosystems.
A WHRO investigation found the fired leader of Norfolk's Housing Authority authorized millions of dollars in no-bid contracts, usually reserved for emergencies.
You know, it was clear with Nathan that if you really didn't play the game, he was, you know, not going to hold on to you.
And a parrot rescue in Virginia won't have its license renewed this August. Now the owners are unsure how the birds will be cared for. It's WHRO's Weekly Edition. One of the ships carrying Marines from the Iwo Jima Amphibious Ready Group returned home Tuesday after 8.5 months in the Caribbean. WHRO military reporter Steve Walsh was there as families were reunited.
The family of Marisol Davila traveled 40 hours from California for the arrival of the USS San Antonio. Her sister Cynthia Davila held two flags and a poster as they waited on the pier.
We were so surprised when she joined the Navy, and honestly, I think based off her accomplishments and everything she's done in the Navy, I'm so proud of her. I was scared, but I'm proud of her. I'm glad she's home.
USS San Antonio was one of three ships in the Iwo Jima ARG. Fully loaded, they carry 1,000 sailors and Marines. They were in the Caribbean during the raid that captured Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro. The ships are now operating independently. The rest of the 4,500 sailors and Marines remain deployed. Steve Walsh, WHRO News.
U.S. Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch stood by his support for indigenous sovereignty during a Williamsburg visit last weekend. WHRO's Nick McNamara reports the justice encouraged young Native people to continue fighting for their communities.
Gorsuch spoke at the Williamsburg Lodge in a day of VA 250 panels about tribal nations, their history and governments, and the devastation they withstood after European colonization.
I'm incredibly hopeful. When I meet young Native people who are equipping themselves to fight these fights, you're doing all the right things. You don't need my help, but I'd love to be able to look down 250 years from now and see what this gathering looks like.
Gorsuch joined the court in 2017 and has been a dogged supporter of Native sovereignty. He was the sole conservative to join with liberal justices in a 2020 case, ruling that much of eastern Oklahoma falls under tribal legal jurisdiction because Congress never voided treaties with the Muscogee Creek and other tribal nations.
And I say, well, Congress, you know how to break a treaty. You want to do it? You do it. But don't you dare ask me to do your dirty work for you.
Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
Former Virginia Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax shot and killed his wife, Dr. Serena Fairfax, inside their home in mid-April. He then shot and killed himself. The couple's two children were inside the home when the shootings occurred. This is a notable instance of a larger issue that's impacting the Commonwealth. Virginia is among the top 10 states for incidents of murder-suicide. Kunle Fali with the Virginia Center for Investigative Journalism at WHRO breaks down the numbers.
Since 2016, Virginia has recorded more than 170 murder-suicides, all committed with firearms. That's about 2.2 incidents per 100,000 residents, a rate comparable to many states but still higher than neighboring Maryland, North Carolina, and West Virginia. The recent murder-suicide of former Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax and his wife Serena inside their Annandale home revealed a broader challenge of persistent gun violence nationally. Kristen Rand with the Violence Policy Center says domestic arguments can easily turn deadly when a firearm is within reach. Virginia lawmakers are now weighing several gun safety proposals, including stricter background checks and safe storage requirements. Kunle Fali, the Virginia Center for Investigative Journalism at WHRO.
If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233 or text BEGIN to 8878. If you need assistance during a mental health crisis, please call or text the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. Blue catfish are an invasive species spreading through the Chesapeake Bay. Virginia wants to stop them before they seriously damage the ecosystem. As WHRO's Catherine Hefner reports, one idea is to eat more of them.
Inside the kitchen at Scrimp Shack in Hampton, Kyle Rowley is frying up some blue catfish. He dips fillets in milk and covers them in a light breading.
Now that we got them completely coated, we're going to drop them into our fryer.
After about 40 seconds, he pulls up the basket and gives it a shake before submerging it again.
And now we wait for the magic.
Traditionally, blue catfish was not on the menu at Scrimp Shack, and it's not currently a moneymaker, but Rowley added it after joining a statewide effort to get people to eat more of the fish, and hopefully reduce the population. Blue catfish are not native to the Chesapeake Bay. They're a funky-looking bunch, with smooth blue skin and cat-like whiskers. They can also be huge, like more than 100 pounds. That's what made them appealing to Virginia officials in the 1970s, when blue catfish were introduced to start a trophy fishery. But they were too successful.
They are very hungry. So they've taken over the bay and the river systems and are out competing and even eating our native species.
That's Rachel Peabody with the Virginia Marine Products Board, a quasi-state agency that helps promote the seafood industry. Blue catfish are gobbling up local favorites like blue crabs, oysters, and even seagrass. Peabody says Virginia saw an opportunity to create a market that also benefits the environment.
The more you eat, the more healthy the bay is, and that's really something I think everyone's interested in capitalizing on.
Virginia's effort to market blue catfish is called River to Table. The first step is getting fish processors on board. They buy fish from watermen and sell them to restaurants and wholesalers.
Whole catfish come in, we head it, gut it, skin it, fillet it, bag it, put it on ice, and ship it out the door.
That's Chris Sopko with Sea Farms in Gloucester. They won one of the state's first river-to-table grants a few years ago. There are some unique challenges to processing blue catfish. They're regulated differently, which requires new infrastructure and an inspector on site. And that takes a lot of money up front. The state is trying to help businesses like Sea Farms make that jump. Sopko says he sees opportunities with blue catfish, but there are big unknowns.
It's hard to look into the future and say, all right, we're going to grow this business and do this, this, and this without having the real facts.
One challenge for Virginia officials is they're asking businesses to invest in a fishery, even though the ultimate goal is to get rid of those fish. But scientists say blue catfish aren't going away anytime soon. Mary Fabrizio is a professor with the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. She says blue catfish are eating and reproducing machines.
We can't eradicate them. We can't even control them in a short period of time. They live 20 plus years. So they're out there, and it's going to take that long or longer, maybe two or three lifetimes.
Back at the Scrimp Shack, Rowley is on a mission to change people's perceptions of blue catfish. He says Virginians tend to think of catfish as bottom feeders, but the blue kind feast throughout the water column. That gives them a fresher flavor.
We are able to turn a lot of customers once they try it. It's kind of the, instead of seeing is believing, tasting is believing.
He's trying to convert people, one customer at a time. Catherine Hafner, WHRO News.
Still ahead on Weekly Edition, Virginia Beach's Clean Community Commission helps pair used clothes with people who need them, all in an effort to prevent waste. But first, Governor Abigail Spanberger was in Roanoke Monday as she continues to put her signature on pieces of legislation sent to her by the General Assembly. As WVTF's Nick Gilmore reports, the focus in Roanoke was on bills that would help bolster career and technical education.
The bills ceremonially signed by Spanberger Monday were bipartisan in nature, and many of them were spearheaded by Democratic delegate Sam Rasool and Republican Senator David Suderline, both of whom represent the city of Roanoke in the legislature. Other bills signed by the governor Monday include measures that expand access to apprenticeships for Virginia high school students, and another that will make the Community Builders Pilot Program permanent. That effort was created in 2024 to help reduce youth involvement in behaviors that lead to gun violence for both Roanoke and Petersburg. Governor Spanberger said the bipartisan legislation flies in the face of what she called vitriol out of the nation's capital, where cooperation between the two major political parties has become very rare. In Roanoke, I'm Nick Gilmore.
Contraceptive services will be free for all privately insured Virginians under a new law starting in 2027. WHO's Yiqing Wang says it includes over-the-counter items, even without a prescription.
The Contraceptive Equity Act would require insurers to cover a broader range of birth control methods without patients having to pay out of pocket. That includes over-the-counter options like condoms and birth control pills, even without a prescription. Tarina King from reproductive advocacy group Repro Rising says the bill goes further by removing barriers that can delay access.
What it does is the bill addresses cost barriers to contraceptive access and healthcare equity by eliminating burdensome copays, cost sharing, reimbursement requirements, and coverage delays.
Patients can also switch to alternatives if a method does not work for them under this bill, with approval from a provider or pharmacist. Yiqing Wang, WHRO News.
The Virginia Department of Transportation is reminding people to stay alert when driving through work zones. WHRO's Toby Cox reports it comes on the heels of thousands of work zone-related crashes in consecutive years.
The Virginia Department of Motor Vehicles estimates more than 4,000 work zone crashes happened in Virginia in 2025. That's more than the year before, and nearly half of them happened in Hampton Roads. Kelly Alvord with VDOT says drivers should slow down, not tailgate, and put away distractions.
It's a very vulnerable place for our construction workers and our construction staff to be, and so they're really trusting the drivers and the public to have those safe behaviors so that they can go about their job safely and really finish the job they're there to do.
Thousands work on job sites along roadways in the region. Alvord says staying alert can help ensure everyone gets to go home at the end of the day. Toby Cox, WHRO News.
Old Dominion University's Green Line project helps people imagine how wetlands will retreat from sea level rise. WHRO's Catherine Hefner took a look at how it works.
The project focused on Port Norfolk in Portsmouth. ODU student Austin Wood says the neighborhood was quickly transformed by industrialization centuries ago.
It's like you have marshes one day and then the next day they're pouring stuff in to fill the marshes. You know, nobody might have known the impact that that would have in the future, but we know now.
As sea levels rise, the land wants to return to those watery days of marshes and creeks. The ODU team mapped how wetlands will retreat inward over the next century. Then they set up flags and drew chalk on the road to demonstrate the boundaries. Here's PhD student Nick Carpenter.
The purpose of this was to get people thinking how our landscape changes when these changes happen, not just to like us, but to the natural environment.
And it's easier for everyone to visualize that on the ground. Catherine Hafner, WHRO News.
A WHRO investigation found the fired leader of Norfolk's housing authority authorized millions of dollars in no-bid contracts, usually reserved for serious emergencies. At least $1 million worth went to contractors with personal ties to him and his top deputies. WHRO's Ryan Murphy has the story.
When Nathan Sims arrived at NRHA late in 2023, Kathy Mosley says he seemed like a breath of fresh air. Sims ran housing agencies in Maryland, Georgia, and Washington, D.C.
He seemed to know what was in need for the agency and where we were going.
Mosley was NRHA's procurement director, handling contracts, and had been there for more than 20 years. Soon after his arrival, Sims ordered Mosley to put together paperwork to hire some consultants. Usually, NRHA would have publicly advertised that it needed to hire someone, then let contractors submit proposals and pick the best one. The majority of government contracts are handled this way to maximize competition and limit corruption. Instead, Mosley says Sims handed her contact information for specific consultants and told her to draw up what are called sole source contracts.
I sat down and, you know, he wanted to do contracts that he's going through his little phone and he had contact numbers and... You know, I needed scopes of work. I didn't know what these people were doing. And, you know, one of the things that it's almost like you're writing your own ticket, you know, because now I got to reach out. What do you want this person to do?
This worried Mosley. She knew those kinds of no-bid contracts are rarely used and come with significant requirements. But Mosley says she did what she was told and made the contracts work because she feared for her job.
You know, it was clear with Nathan that if you really didn't play the game, he was... You know, not going to hold on to you.
When she did begin pushing back in 2024, Mosley says she was moved out of the procurement office. On Valentine's Day 2025, her supervisor told her she was being laid off. Several NRHA contracts issued under Sims's leadership and reviewed by WHRO violated state procurement law. They also violated Norfolk's own policies and guidance from the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. For instance, Virginia law says anytime an agency issues a sole source contract, it has to write a justification explaining why it couldn't go through the standard public purchasing process. Some NRHA contracts didn't have justifications at all. The justifications WHRO did review all claimed an emergency need to immediately hire these contractors. NRHA policy says emergency contracts are reserved for when life, limb, or property are in peril. But Sims used them to hire contractors to provide advice on NRHA's policies, issuing bonds, and, quote, independent research and analysis of housing programs.
Emergency is not a synonym for convenience.
That's Bill Kovacic, a procurement expert from George Washington University Law School. He says sole source contracts are sometimes unavoidable, like when the heat goes out in public housing during a cold snap. But Kovacic says repeated long-term use of no-bid contracts and consistently ignoring state, local, and federal rules should have raised red flags for the agency's board. Beyond those violations, WHRO used online records to uncover personal and business connections between Sims, executives he hired at NRHA, and at least four contractors who got no-bid contracts. They include former employees and co-workers at other housing authorities, and one man who ran a private business with NRHA's former chief operating officer.
It's cronyism and familiarity, which is bad not just because it diminishes the value that's being obtained for the expenditures, it corrodes the civic trust.
NRHA commissioners say Sims and his deputies kept them in the dark and didn't report any sole source contracts to the board. Documents show NRHA issued at least 30 such contracts after Sims took over. In October 2025, commissioners started asking Sims about no-bid contracts and ordered one contract halted. It's not clear what prompted the move. Emails obtained by WHRO show Sims wasn't giving board members the information they'd asked for.
Morning, everyone, friends, residents, commissioners, also NRHA.
By November, the board's patience had run out.
We're in open sessions.
I'd like to make a motion that we terminate our executive director.
After firing Sims, Norfolk's board brought in longtime NRHA executive Michael Clark to clean up the mess. Clark declined to speak with WHRO, citing an ongoing internal investigation that he indicated could yet uncover criminal activities. Since Clark took over, NRHA's top ranks have been purged of the associates Sims hired, and several contracts have been terminated. The agency created an office to enforce regulatory compliance, and the board commissioned an outside audit. WHRO has not been able to speak with Sims since his firing. He's been hired to lead another housing authority, this time in Charleston, South Carolina. Ryan Murphy, WHRO News.
Freelance reporter Jim Morrison contributed to this report. The Colonial Williamsburg Foundation announced on Monday it has a new CEO. WHRO's Nick McNamara has more on the group's new leadership.
Carly Fiorina is now leading the foundation after Cliff Fleet announced his retirement. Fleet helmed Colonial Williamsburg for about 6 years after coming to the organization from the Jamestown-Yorktown Foundation. Fiorina said in a statement that Fleet's service was tireless and left a profound impact on CW. Fiorina, a member of Colonial Williamsburg's Board of Trustees since 2017, is chair of Virginia's commission organizing the Commonwealth celebration of the U.S.'s 250th anniversary. She was formerly CEO of Hewlett-Packard and advised Senator John McCain's presidential campaign. Fiorina also campaigned for the Senate in California in 2010 and for the Republican presidential nomination in 2016. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
The Clean Community Commission in Virginia Beach helps get used clothes to people who can wear them. WHRO's John Doucette says it's done in part to eliminate clothing waste.
On a recent Saturday, families hunted through clothes on tables beneath a tent at Mount Trashmore. The donated items for kids and adults were available for free. It's called Zero Waste Wardrobe. The city's Clean Community Commission has held two events so far and plans to do more. Miles Pullman of Ocean Lakes High School is a student member of the commission.
So we're trying to promote zero waste so that these clothes don't end up in a landfill and they can end up in the community instead.
Volunteers collect items in the weeks before each Zero Waste Wardrobe distribution. The next is expected to coincide with the annual Turkey Bowl hosted by the Sheriff's Office. That's in November. Follow Keep Virginia Beach Beautiful on Facebook for information. John Doucette, WHRO News.
The Governor's School for the Arts presents a bluesy, soulful twist on an opera classic at the Wells Theater this Friday and Saturday. Kate Nowak reports for WHRO.
It's The Barber of Seville, only now it's in a black barbershop.
Factotum Groom and Glow combines opera with sounds from R&B, funk, and gospel. The creators, award-winning producer DJ King Rico and Grammy winner Will Liverman, were once students at the Governor's School themselves. They say it's a full circle moment for them. The students say it's motivation. Here's lead actress and high school senior Lauren Rogers.
They've started here, and they started where I am now, and seeing them do such amazing things, it's really inspiring.
The creators say they want to challenge what opera could look like. Here's Rico.
I hope that they walk away knowing that their existence matters and is worthy of being, you know, seen in audiences on stages.
Kate Nowak, WHRO News.
A parrot rescue in Virginia is scrambling to find a new location before its lease runs out in August. WHRO's Toby Cox has more.
Hello. Hello. Back.
Meet Jude, a 35-year-old Ruby macaw with a lot of personality. He's one of the residents at Nana and Papa's Nest, a parrot rescue in Wakefield.
Is it common for them to swear?
Yes.
Jude moved in after his owner died a few months ago. Jody Owry with the rescue says it's common for the birds to outlive their caretakers. Jude could live to be 100. Many of the parrots at the rescue are older, have special needs, or experienced trauma that makes adoption unlikely or impossible. Jude, for example, is blind. The rescue was supposed to be his new forever home, but that's now in jeopardy. Owry says they just got notice the lease won't be renewed in August. Nearly 60 parrots live at the rescue and are at risk of being displaced.
This is not the first time they've lost their home coming to us, and they're losing their home again.
With just 4 months to secure a new place, Owry says everyone at the volunteer-run rescue is feeling the pressure. The birds, after all, depend on them to figure it out. Owry says parrots are impressive. Larger ones have bite forces that can easily deshell walnuts, almonds, and pistachios, a few of their favorite treats. They're funny, smart, and loyal.
They'll dance with you, some of them will talk to you, some of them will call you bad names.
People give them up for all sorts of reasons. Owry says she's heard them all. The owners died, had to move to assisted living, or couldn't care for the birds properly. Or the realities of having a parrot didn't quite meet expectations.
We didn't know they were going to be so loud. We didn't know they were so messy. We didn't know they were not going to like us or they were going to like my wife and not me.
She says animal shelters aren't equipped for parrots. Common cleaning supplies like bleach can harm their lungs. They can't share a room with animals like mice, lizards, and rabbits. And they need vets specialized in avian care. But Nana and Papa's Nest is already at capacity. Around 50 pending applications are on hold, some covering multiple birds.
For every one adoption application we get, we'll get 2 to 3 surrender applications. So there's a huge need in Virginia for parrot rescues.
Owry says the rescue wanted to get a bigger space to accommodate more parrots eventually, but not on such a rushed timeline. The rescue is trying to raise $400,000 to buy a permanent location before August 31st. They'd like to stay around Wakefield, but are open to other ideas. The ultimate goal is for the parrots to never be displaced again. Toby Cox, WHRO News.
You've been listening to WHRO's Weekly Edition. We had help today from WHRO's Toby Cox, John Doucette, Catherine Hefner, Nick McNamara, Jim Morrison, Ryan Murphy, Kate Nowak, Steve Walsh, and Yi-Ching Wang.
VCIJ's Kunle Faliyi and WVTF's Nick Gilmore. Also Connor Worley, who produced today's show. A reminder that you can always catch full episodes on the Weekly Edition podcast feed.
You can get your news updates at WHRO.org and the WHRO Reports podcast feed. For all of us at WHRO and WHRV, I'm Barry Graham.
And I'm Jordan Christie. Have a great weekend.